I like to know where I stand with people. For better or for worse, it's good to know who your friends are. And it's even better to know who your enemies are. Perhaps the worst and most dangerous individual in the world is the man who gives over a certain perception about themselves, that they're your friends, that they embrace you in companionship, and then, moments afterwards, they speak ill about you and stab you in the back. Fortunately, a lot of those people are like glass. You can see right through them. Some others are so hard to read and understand, so they give mixed messages whether or not they really love you or they hate you. Such an individual is like Esav in this week's parsha. The Torah opens with the story of Yaakov. Yaakov realizing that his brother Esav is coming after him. And therefore he sends shluchim, he sends messengers in order to be able to appease him. Unfortunately, they come back with a report, the Ba'anu el Achicha el Esav, that we came to your brother, to Esav, the Gamholich likroscha v'arba meos yishimo. He's not coming by himself. He's furious. He hates your guts so much so that he has 400 men with him to making sure the job will be done. And remember, this is a family. This is not an army. And yet Esav feels it's necessary to get 400 people to make sure that they die. Then the Torah continues with Yaakov preparing for war. He has a little wrestling match. And then, the very next day, the very dramatic and famous encounter of Yaakov and Esav. The Yaretz Esav likroso, Esav runs after him, probably to kill him. But that's not what happens. V'chabkehu v'yipul al savarav v'shakehu v'yivchu. He embraces his brother, he falls on his neck, and kisses him, and they cry. It's an incredible statement, an incredible pasuk. After all, what on earth is Esav thinking? Just the day before, Yaakov sensed that he was on the verge of extermination. Complete homicide. Complete genocide. And what was the reason for this? Because he took the brachos away from his brother. An act that occurred over 36 years ago. Then all of a sudden, like turning a switch, Esav loves him, hugs him, kisses him. What's going on with this guy? Is he bipolar? Insane? That one day he loves that person, next day he hates them. Just like a little child plucking leaves off of a flower and saying, she loves me, she loves me not. Who is this Esav? What was he doing? Furthermore, we know that if Esav really wanted to kill his brother, why is he waiting until this moment to do so? Everyone knew where Yaakov was. Yaakov was in the house of Laban. This was not like the Secret Service putting him in South Dakota. Everyone knew he was at his relative's house. So why didn't Esav attack him there when he was vulnerable, sitting in the fields watching a bunch of animals? But he didn't. He waited until now. And then when he had the opportunity to kill his brother, Vishakehu, he kissed him. Rashi tells us that Omer Rav Shimon ben Yochai, halachahi, there's a law. Biyadua she'esav son of Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. So how come he kissed him? Elosh nichma rachma ba'osa shah v'nashka b'chalibo. He was overtaken with passion and love for his brother that he kissed him with all his heart. So some explain, how is that possible? Why did he do it? So they answer, because there's a halacha There's a law that he has to hate him. Some people are so anti-halacha that even though he hates his brother, he will do everything to violate halacha to love him, at least for that one moment, to break the law. But other than that, how do we understand this? Why did he show compassion at this particular moment in his life? He hated him. So why didn't he kill him? If we look at the word of Yishakehu, we find something unusual in the Torah. Sometimes the Torah has a large letter, sometimes the letter is smaller. Here we find on top of the word Yishakehu are dots. The Medrash offers the reason for these dots. Melamed shlobo lanashko elanashko. That Esav really did not come to kiss his brother, Neshika, with a kuf. Rather, Neshika, he planned on biting his brother. But a miracle happened, says the Medrash. V'nasa savar shel Yaakov Avinu shel Shesh. That his neck became that of marble. V'kahu shinov shel Osa Rasha. And it broke the teeth of this wicked person. The difficulty with this Medrash is it's completely out of context. If we read the storyline, we find that immediately after he was kissed, or as the Medrash says, he was bit, Esav asks a question, who are these people? Yaakov answers, these are the great people that God graciously gave me. And then he asks a couple other questions. Then he said, hey Yaakov, why don't you come with me? And Esav said, you know, and that's what Esav said. And Yaakov said, you know what, I'd rather not. I have little children. Why don't you go ahead of me? Doesn't sound like a person who tried to sink his teeth into you. If a person tried to bite me, I'm not about to have a nice, pleasant conversation with them. So what's going on over here? I believe the message, the answer to these questions, is found in Yaakov's own words, describing Esav. He turns to God and says, Hatzileni nam yad achim yad Esav. Save me, please, from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. What? We don't know they're brothers? That they're twins? And perhaps you would say, maybe there's one person that reads the Torah that didn't know that Yaakov and Esav were brothers. But Yaakov is davening to Hashem. He's praying to God. God certainly knows that they're brothers. So what is he saying, this sentence, Hatzileni nam yad achim yad Esav? I believe that Yaakov is praying that he should be saved, as well as the Jewish people in the future generations, from two things. Miad achi, umiad Esav. First of all, save me when he acts miad Esav, just like Esav, who wishes to physically do harm and destroy me and my family and the future of the Jewish nation. However, says Yaakov, save me also miad achi. Save me when he acts like a brother, when he's warm, when he's loving and nurturing, when he embraces me with an embrace of friendship. Don't allow myself to believe that he really loves me, because he has ulterior motives. He wants me to self-destruct, that I should no longer be spiritual. But by assimilating through his friendship, the Jewish people will not exist that way either. Save me from Esav, and save me from when he acts like a brother. The Parsha therefore really shows both destructive forces and approaches of Esav HaRasha. First, in the evening, when Yaakov wrestles a person, says the Chazal, it's the Sar Shel Esav, the essence of what Esav is, wrestling with Yaakov, trying to destroy him physically. However, we find that this Sar Shel Esav, as much as they tried so hard to attack him and destroy Yaakov physically, it was unsuccessful. And therefore he had to leave. And it was then understood that Esav realized to be able to destroy Klal Yisrael, completely, to destroy them physically is impossible. But rather, let me appear now as a brother, with the hopes that I can destroy him and the future of Klal Yisrael spiritually. Therefore, Esav never stopped hating his brother. After all, Biyaduah Esav son of Yaakov, all he did was change his tactics. Shenichmaru rachma b'osa shah, by showing compassion and love at that time, by kissing him, which appeared as though it was wholeheartedly. By doing so, he, Esav, was hoping that Yaakov would assimilate, would be like him, and to be able to be lost in his embrace. And this is the meaning of the Medrash. Certainly the Medrash is not changing the words of the Torah. Yaakov was not bitten. He was kissed. But the Medrash says, don't make any mistake when it comes to the kiss of an Esav. For the gentle placing of a blade or the sharp teeth on the flesh of the neck of Esav, of Yaakov, or any Jew, is similar to the placing of Esav's very own lips on the neck of a Jew. For the kiss of an Esav is no less destructive than his bite. And this was the message of Esav HaRasha. He had no interest in attacking his brother while he was in the house of Laban. Why should he? Laban was a Rasha, a wicked man. And the hopes were that being in that influence, being in such an environment of Laban, Yaakov would be stripped of any spirituality, any religious beliefs, and he would self-destruct by becoming just like Laban. And this is the reason why Yaakov gave the message to his brother that I will not self-destruct. You cannot attack me spiritually. Im Lavan Harasha Garti, with Lavan the wicked I did live. Vitaryag Mitzvah Shamarti, but yet I still was able to adhere to all 613 mitzvot, regardless of my surroundings, regardless of the environment that I was put in. V'lamati Mamasim Harayim, I did not learn from his evil actions. So therefore, at that moment, Esav realized that although his brother could not possibly be affected spiritually by Laban, let me attack him physically. And if I cannot be successful, as the wrestling match showed in attacking him physically, allow me then to embrace him in friendship. And hopefully, when his guard is down, I will be able to attack him, attack his spirituality. With this, we can now better understand a very cryptic passage stated in the Gemara in Masechet Chulin on page 91a, Tzadi Alpha Madal. Who was this person? This image that Yaakov wrestled? The Talmud says that it took upon itself more than one image, more than one look. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omer, Ke'ovid Kechavim Nidmelo, that this Sar Shel Esav had the appearance of Ovid Kechavim, of a vile and lowly idol worshipper. But continues the Talmud, Rabbi Shmuel bar Acha Kamed de Rapapa, said Mishmei in the name of Rava bar Ula, Ketalmid Chacham Nidmelo. No, that this Sar Shel Esav had the appearance of a Talmud Chacham, of a scholar. But which one was it? Was the representative of Esav likened to a sinful idol worshiper or to a respectable scholar? The answer is both. But the idol worshiper, the person who goes against all of Judaism and everything that we stand for and represent, that's an easy person to distinguish and to distance yourself from. But sometimes, Esav appears as a brother. And this is an incredibly destructive force. He appears as a tenured professor or world-renowned scholar. And he says, Yaakov, you're a Yoshev O'Halim. You're a man that sits in tents. You're a scholar. Look at me. I'm also a scholar. We're the same. We're exactly the same. We're brothers. Be like me. Follow me. And that's exactly what Esav said to Yaakov. V'yomer nisa v'neilecha v'elcha l'negdecha. Travel on and let us go. I will proceed alongside you. V'elcha l'negdecha. But Esav was hoping that his negativity will rub off on Yaakov and destroy him spiritually. And Yaakov, knowing this, realized that the kiss that he received from his brother was like a bite. And therefore Yaakov's neck was like marble. For if a person is like a rock, a stone, marble, shows no emotion. And that kiss, Yaakov was able to read right through it. And therefore he said, no, ki ladim rakim batson babakar alos olai. I can't go with you, because look at my children, they're so small. Look at my animals. Why don't you go ahead of me? And maybe one day, I'll catch up to you. What Yaakov is saying is, I will not allow you to destroy me. And I do not want to associate with you and your kind. I will make my neck like marble so that your kisses will have no impact on me. But this is the incredible message of our parsha, that Yaakov was successful, but unfortunately, he was hit. He was hit on the thigh, which corresponds to the Gid Hanasha, the tendon, the sinew of a person. And therefore, the Torah says, we cannot eat from this part of an animal. Says Nachmanides the Ramban, what is this alluding to? It's alluding to the children of Yaakov, the children of Israel. We are the Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, the message of our parsha is that it's not just a test, a travail, of Yevatzer Yaakov Avado, that Yaakov was alone, but each and every one of us must wrestle by ourselves with this issue, the issue of assimilation, the issue of the embrace of Esav. And I believe this is very appropriate as we come so close to the holiday of Chanukah. Chanukah, in Halacha, it states that even a person who is so impoverished, who needs to go and knock on doors for charity to survive, such a person needs to sell the clothes that he owns, or to put himself up for hire to obtain a candle for the Chanukiah and the menorah on Chanukah. And why is this? Because of pursuing Nisa, of publicizing the miracle. But we don't find this same halakha by Purim, which is also an element of publicizing the miracle. And I believe if we study the differences between Purim and Chanukah, we understand a very similar theme from our parsha. See, on Purim, there was a terrible man. His name was Haman. Haman wished to destroy, complete genocide on all the Jewish people. Men, women, children. So when we remember this story, and we remember this person who is a direct descendant of Esav, Haman, who comes from Amalek, the grandson of Esav, we look at him and say, of course we don't want to associate with such a person. Such a person is violent, he's vile, he's corrupt, he was a murderer. So on Purim, it's a very easy reminder. But on Chanukah, the difference is so much more subtle. For Antiochus did not wish to attack our bodies, but rather to attack our minds. to attack our spiritual growth, that we should assimilate, that we should be just like him. It was the embrace of the Avanim of the Assyrian Greeks that made us try to believe that they loved us. But what end up happening, potentially, is that we would self-destruct by becoming Hellenized, becoming like the Greeks. And therefore, the message of the Chanukiah is not just lighting a candle, but when we light our menorah and shed light, not just in our homes, but as we place it by our windows and our doors, that light will shine outward onto the streets of the world of assimilation. And we make the declaration when we light our menorah and say that we will not allow ourselves to be destroyed, not physically by Esav, and not spiritually by Esav. Just as Yaakov Avinu did, may we also pray that Hashem should be able to save us. Hatzileni na miyad Achi, miyad Esav. Good Shabbos.